and welcome back to the FPL Lounge podcast. We are back with our Game Week 21 preview, a pretty unique game week by all accounts. My name is Chris Hopkins, and I'm joined by the Harry Kane to my Timo Werner. It is Andy Case. Andy, I mean, your team were linked with Timo a lot, and I think we'd probably shared a few messages back and forth about, you know, you could understand it, I think, and, you know, he was only ever due to be kind of like a Weghorst type deal, and even I'd say I think Timo Werner feels like an upgrade on Weghorst. But it felt like Spurs kind of came out of nowhere to, I mean, I would say gazump you. To what extent you can be gazumped, Timo Werner, I guess, remains to be seen. But I think the main takeaway that I've got here, and I guess I alluded to it at the top of the show, is that this is one that we're definitely not going to get sucked into from an FPL point of view, isn't it? We've seen this movie before, and, you know, we certainly like a certain type of player. I think sometimes it can be that languid Kai Havertz style, but I think we went very hot on Timo Werner once upon a time when he just signed for Chelsea, and yeah, I don't think we're going to get burned again, are we?
No, I mean, I've said this once, I'll say it probably many more times on this show. Call me old-fashioned, but I like my strikers to score goals. That's quite a key element in what I'm looking for. And then that's even more true when they're a fantasy asset as well. So given his fantastic record at not doing that as often as he should, it's why I can't see much upside at this point in bringing him in my fantasy team. I mean, we're preempting a little bit some stuff we might say later. His price isn't horrendous.
Definitely better than when he was first in the league for Chelsea, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, he's got some showing me to do first, frankly.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And yeah, I mean, obviously, the Harry Kane comparison is a little bit unfair because I guess he's not being brought in to directly replace Harry Kane. It feels very much like a short-term thing to, you know, help Spurs get through the Asian Cup with Son departing, but still, it's reinforcements going forward, and yeah, we'll see. You know, he might end up making us look very silly, I guess. He could score loads of goals and could be reinvigorated, but he hasn't, even since he left Chelsea. Obviously, he came to Chelsea with a lot of fanfare and had scored quite a few goals for Leipzig, but it's not even like leaving Chelsea and going back to Leipzig really sort of reignited his career. It seems like he's still dining off how he was 5 seasons ago now, and yeah, it doesn't sit very well with me.
No, yeah, well, that's it, exactly. So he may well not play through the middle for Spurs either when he does play, so maybe that's a good thing, because then you're not relying on the goals quite so much. But yeah, let's see.
And final question, I don't want to labour the Werner point too much, but were you a little bit surprised to see him listed as a forward, given that the consensus seems to be that he's going to kind of maybe take that left-sided Son role? It feels a bit unfair given Son is listed as a midfielder and then Werner comes in as a forward. Is he still almost being, yeah, I guess, almost dining off that reputation as being a centre-forward that perhaps is quite outdated now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I guess he was defined as a forward when he was last in FPL, so maybe that's got something to do with it. Like, they haven't seen enough evidence to warrant a move, a change of position. I haven't really obviously been on top of where he was playing when he did play for Leipzig.
Bench.
Sure, but he must have had some minutes, right?
And yeah.
If those were through the middle, or some of them were through the middle, then maybe that's prompted FPL to kind of keep it as it is. And I suppose even if he does start on the left, you know, Richarlison has played out there at points before, so there's kind of an easy in-game switch between the two, isn't there, that could happen. So yeah,
definitely. All right, well, let's leave Timo Werner for a little while at least, and let's crack on with the show, because there is plenty to talk about. Obviously, it's been a little while since we last did a podcast, and this game week is particularly unique, because obviously it takes place over 2 calendar weeks, so there is plenty to discuss, and yeah, there's going to be a little while before we'll be doing our next preview pod. Now, as always, though, we will be start by running down the game week's fixtures, and we'll have a quick chat about this week's talking points, of which there are many. We've got some new players on the radar, but also some returning faces. We will be swimming against the tide this game week for the first time in a while, and then we'll finish as ever with captaincy and the return of a little game we like to call who the heck is that? But let's start by running down those all-important Game Week 21 fixtures. Your deadline is this Friday, the 12th of January at 6:15 6:15 UK time. And that's because Friday night football is a big one, Burnley versus Luton. Then, we've alluded to, the elongated game week. So we've got two fixtures on Saturday. One is at lunchtime, and that's a West London derby with Chelsea hosting Fulham. And then a tea time kickoff with Newcastle hosting Man City. And then two fixtures on Sunday. That's Everton hosting Aston Villa, and then Man United playing Spurs.
Moving on a whole week then forward to Saturday the 20th of January, we've got Arsenal versus Palace and Brentford versus Nottingham Forest. Sunday the 21st sees Sheffield United versus West Ham and Bournemouth versus Liverpool. And then Monday night football to round off the game week, Monday the 22nd of Jan, Brighton versus Wolves.
So plenty to discuss, Andy, I guess, in case listeners aren't aware, and they probably are and probably should be, that the reason for this elongated game week is, you know, this is the Premier League's winter break, so it allows essentially teams to only play one Premier League match over the fortnight. Some teams will end up having more matches because I think they've got FA Cup replays in between, but yeah, I guess that's the reason behind it. It does mean that we're going to have a deadline where we're not going to have heard a lot of managers' press conferences, and obviously there are plenty of injury issues in FPL at the minute, primarily I guess relating to three relatively high-owned assets in Erling Haaland, Jared Bowen and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Not heard much from Pep in the way of Haaland, but we will hear from Pep. Pep will probably be one of the few managers that we will hear from before the deadline, so be listening out for all of those Haaland updates. And obviously his ownership throughout the Club World Cup and his injury has dropped from about sort of like 90% down to about 50%, and that feels like there's probably quite a few dead teams in that 50% ownership for Haaland at the minute. He apparently was pictured in training yesterday, but I think definitely waiting for any news from Pep, because he's been quite cautious around Haaland thus far. Different kind of story at the minute, Andy, with Jared Bowen and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Trent in particular, we've had confirmation, I think, from Jurgen Klopp's assistant ahead of their Carabao Cup semi-final that Trent's out for 3 weeks. That is apparently 3 calendar weeks, so likely to miss several Liverpool matches, but maybe only one, possibly two Premier League matches. But obviously there's going to be a lot of managers that own him, and he is very expensive, so a decision whether to sell or hold him is going to be a tricky one. And then Jared Bowen, similarly, I don't think there's been any confirmation from David Moyes, but seemingly, according to reports, out for about 3 to 4 weeks. It gives managers a lot to think about, along with obviously the African Cup of Nations and Asian Cup, meaning that many teams, although those didn't wildcard them out, you know, there were many that weren't on wildcards anyway, are going to be potentially left with Salah and or Son, Bowen, and maybe Trent. There's going to be a lot, and then there's probably got other injury or suspension flags as well. So teams could be looking pretty ropey going into game week 21.
Yeah, that is the worry. And the problem, I think I've seen a lot of teams on FPL Twitter with multiple flags in and people getting itchy about what to do about it. But yeah, I think there is an upside for people who've just wildcarded, I guess, in that maybe their teams can kind of deal with it. But I suppose what adds an extra complication is that because of the amount of time that is extended for this game week, and then the fact that the following weekend is actually FA Cup weekend, so the next game week doesn't start till right at the end of January, there's actually like a lot of time for players to recover, and so there can be, you know, the potential incentive to bench a player if you've got the wiggle room in your squad, because they could be back, even like a Trent and a Bowen, where it's upwards of a month for Bowen, but we're looking at like 3 or 4 weeks till game week 22 anyway. So and so there's talk that both of those could well be back for game week 22. And in addition to that, which also relates to Haaland as well, in terms of where your money is in your team, because obviously Trent's quite expensive, but Salah is the other, you know, expensive kind of piece of this puzzle, and he will have played, if they get through Egypt, his nation, their round of 16 game, in that there's so much time before game week 22. They'll have played all of the group stage and potentially the first knockout round. So you'll know whether he's playing in a quarter final, whether he's got through to quarter finals or not, basically. And you know, there's a possibility that Salah could be out of AFCON before game week 22, and then your incentive to sell him, you know, he'd be looking at probably maybe even being back if he flew straight back to play in game week 22, but certainly game week 23. And so any ideas of, you know, because there's a hypothetical situation where you sell Salah and hold Trent if you feel like Trent's got a chance of being back sooner, but that could be thrown up in the air if you know, if we find out before the next game week that Salah might not be back in too long a time either. So loads of complications going on here because of various factors, injury, tournaments, the length of time between game weeks. And I suppose all you can do is just try and be as informed as you can.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think the Trent example is really useful actually to kind of illustrate it. You know, he's supposedly out for 3 weeks, so he missed the Fulham first leg Carabao Cup semi-final this week. I think it was played on the 10th. So obviously 3 weeks takes you up basically until the end, you know, the end of January. You know, he will miss Liverpool's game against Bournemouth in game week 21, but then he's also due to miss, in theory, the second leg of that Carabao Cup game, and as you say, Andy, FA Cup round 4. But then, you know, the end of the month or the end of that 3 week injury period does coincide with their game week 22 fixture, which coincidentally is Chelsea. So not the easiest game, and one that you'd want Trent to be back for. And then it's Arsenal after that. So, you know, he might only end up missing one FPL game week, even though he is currently flagged, and I'm sure there'll be many sales. And if you built up value in him, then maybe you'd be thinking it's time to cash in, or maybe you'd be looking to hold on because of that value that you built up. So yeah, there is plenty to think about. I guess the other kind of a bit of advice, I think, that maybe we'd be looking to give, and this, you know, we don't tend to tell people what to do. That's, you know, one of the sort of key principles, really, of the FPL lounge is that we, you know, we're trying to lay out the pros and cons, but definitely not tell people what to do or you know, encourage you to follow our advice. But it does definitely feel like the picture for a lot of things, including blank game weeks and double game weeks coming up, is going to be significantly clearer ahead of the game week 22 deadline than it is at this stage because of that time difference. You know, I guess we think, Andy, that we're, you know, quite likely to know if there are going to be double game weeks and when there might be, particularly for Man City and Liverpool. Obviously, Man City have that rearranged game against Brentford because of the Club World Cup to be placed at some point. And similarly, if Liverpool make the Carabao Cup final, then they will have a very attractive double at some point and limited places to put that because of their continuation in Europe and other cup competitions. But we'll know if they're in the Carabao Cup final by the end of or by the start of game week 22, and we'll also know if they're in FA Cup round 5 probably. So yeah, there's plenty more information to know if you can just leave it. And I think that maybe leans people to be holding Trent perhaps, or if they've decided to get rid of Salah because he was going to AFCON, then sure, do that. But if you've got other holes, then maybe it is worth holding on and riding it out this week with perhaps a bench or maybe even 10 players. Because losing these players for just one game week isn't maybe worth that transfer.
Yeah, because you might then, if any of those that we've mentioned are back in 23 or even 22, then you're going to be a bit gutted, aren't you? So, and it's not to say that, because you can obviously still then lose them before game week 22 if necessary, and if they're not going to be back, right? But you'll have two free transfers. And more information. So I suppose it ultimately boils down to, doesn't it, like if your team can cope with it, if you've got that wiggle room to play in 11 this week, even with the flags and the injuries and stuff. And I guess me and you are thinking this way because we sort of just about do at the moment, we think. And there might well be other people sitting there thinking, well, that's all well and good, but I'm going to have to get rid of one of them. And so I guess, yeah, if you're having to make a decision, if you're, for the sake of making sure you've got an 11, yeah, like I say, I suppose it's just a case of making yourself as informed as possible. I suppose if you're not worrying about freeing up money out of Trent or Salah for a Haaland move, then maybe the safest of those three high profile ones is Bowen, I guess, because he has less upside and his injury is purported to be longer, so his absence could be longer, couldn't it? So although West Ham's fixtures are slightly more attractive going forward, I think, well, in the short term at least, because they've got Sheffield United and Bournemouth in the next two. So, that's a...
I mean, the other thing that worries me about Bowen on specifically is obviously that, you know, they're not just missing him. They're missing Lucas Paquetá, who's also got an injury, and Kudus, who's at AFCON. So it feels like even if Bowen was available, the creativity that West Ham might bring is significantly reduced at the minute. And obviously, you know, in terms of some of the fixtures and the permutations, as ever and as everyone in the FPL community does, you know, we are relying on Ben Crellin, at Ben Crellin on Twitter for a lot of this information, particularly when it comes to fixtures. He's definitely the fixtures maestro. But yeah, just to, I guess, be clear, you know, between or ahead of game week 22, but after the game week 21 deadline, you know, the game week 26 blanks are likely to be confirmed. The double game week fixtures, if they occur in game week 25, which is rumoured for City and Liverpool, they're likely to be confirmed. We'll have a better idea of what blank game week 28, 29, what might look like, and then equally some of the blanks and doubles later in the season as well. So there does seem to be a good idea maybe to just kind of wait this game week out, and Liverpool in particular, those Liverpool assets, Trent and Salah, and they were very well could be doubling just after Salah gets back from AFCON. So yeah, there's maybe some, maybe a benefit, I guess, to waiting until game week 22 and then making some decisions there. So yeah, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of thought about rolling transfers and stuff this week, Andy, providing your team can survive it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's what you're saying about having the wiggle room. It's related to that as well as having the squad. I mean, I suppose even regardless of the fact that we've been able to do that because of a wild card recently, I suppose me and you would probably both say generally that's what we aim for, and it's relatively good practice that we've seen, obviously particularly in the pandemic years, but even just more generally, that, you know, rotation happens, benchings happen, having playing bench, that's why any like 4.0 mil defending starter ends up being near our radar, right? Because just the value in having the cheapest price possible starter is massive. Even if it's only 2 points, the fact they're a starter enables you to have that money elsewhere in your squad, but also in dilemma situations like this, be comfortable about the fact that at least you're going to be able to put an 11 out.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, that's quite a lengthy talking points, but I think it's definitely worthwhile. So let's move on to the radar, and I guess there is an element, Andy, because I think we are leaning towards rolling if we can, that maybe the radar is looking a little bit barer, but still there is some new additions and also some players that's definitely worth highlighting that have been carried over from the game week 20 preview. No one in the center of our radar, so we'll head straight to the mid-range, and Pascal Gross remains here. Very good underlying numbers, Andy, and I guess Brighton still have their midfield and attacking injury issues, which means his minutes seem more secure than perhaps they would usually be. Having said that, he seems more secure for minutes than most Brighton assets anyway. And they've also got some pretty good fixtures on the horizon. So he seems like a player that I think we were maybe on a little bit earlier than the FPL community. I'm seeing more and more sort of nods towards Gross at the minute, and obviously he was on the mid-range for our game week 20 preview as well. He made it into my wildcard team, to be completely transparent about it. However, in game week 20 I did struggle to get him into my 11. I don't think he ended up returning, so it wasn't too bad, but yeah, good underlying numbers and potentially high upside for a pick that was at least maybe flying under the radar.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think, look, we, you know, I don't think we tried to blow our own trumpet too much, but definitely on Solanke recently and Gross now, I think we've got other examples from earlier in the season too. We I suppose because we use the numbers there as our starting point, we sort of, I guess, observe these trends appearing before maybe others do, because it's they're not appearing in the actual returns necessarily, right? So yeah, that's the value you can get from listening to the FPL Lounge. Tell your friends, spread the word. I think he's never gonna, I'm not fully convinced that he's ever gonna be like the absolute returns king. He just doesn't strike me as a consistent goal or assist getter, but he does go on streaks, doesn't he? And his underlying numbers have been good recently. getting lots of big chances himself, but creating them for others too. It's like a good, you know, often when we're talking about these people, we're often talking about people who have high XA or high non-penalty XG. He has a not massive amount of either, but a reasonable, is very steady amount of both, right? So, I mean, he's got potential for returns on both fronts, which is great. I saw someone on FPL Twitter as well putting together, I can't remember who it was, otherwise I could give him some credit, but putting together a package of, like a highlights package of gross crash in the box late type thing, like late third man runs, and so thinking that he's the second midfielder in the game for big chances at the moment, that's big chances he's getting himself, the point they were making essentially was that they think it's like a deliberate, you know, instruction tactic from De Zerbi to utilize gross like that, which does, you know, up his appeal, doesn't it, frankly, if that's the case. So I suppose the other point to make here is Brighton's fixtures, right? I think that's how he also ended up getting onto our radar so quickly, that mixture of the numbers and the fixtures. I mean, the next three for Brighton are Wolves, Luton and Palace. So, and longer term, like the next eight or nine, they've got really, really good fixtures across all of those games over the next eight or nine game weeks before they don't have rotation to worry about for Europe either until a little bit later, because of their winning their Europa League group, they don't have to play until later on. So yeah, lots of positives for Brighton assets and Gross in particular.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 0.43 expected goal involvement per 90 this year, and I guess he's only missed three games, so that's almost as kind of good as you're gonna get, I think, for a Brighton asset that isn't on penalties. I'm sure that João Pedro's, you know, XGI per 90 is probably much better, but his ex-mins is, or has been at least, significantly lower. So yeah, I think there's definitely some upside, but those fixtures are, there's a lot to be liked. And yeah, I think there's another Twitter account, and again, I would give them the credit if I could remember it, but it's almost like goals imminent, and it highlights the players that have good underlying numbers, are getting into good positions, but maybe haven't quite returned yet. I feel like Pascal Gross would be in that category. Like, it feels like he's due a return soon. Come off the back of two blanks, but did assist in game week 18. So yeah, maybe something imminent for him.
I can't remember his name. It's a fantasy football scout guy, because he has a table, a goals imminent table on Fantasy Football Scout. So yeah, I can remember the company.
Maybe if we dig it out, he's actually a Brighton fan.
That guy who makes that table as well.
I mean, maybe if we dig it out, we could put it in the pod notes, couldn't we? As well, having a look at.
FF Scout Joe, I think it is.
There you go.
FF_Scout_Joe on Twitter. He's the goals imminent guy.
Oh well, maybe we can tweet it, or as I say, put it in the pod notes for our listeners to have a look at. Another teammate of Pascal Gross's features in our mid-range, and that's Purvis Estupiñán. I think he is one of the most transferred in players ahead of this game week. I'm pretty sure he is the most transferred in defender, and that's definitely going to have a lot to do with Trent Alexander-Arnold's injury and looking for alternatives. But he's got two returns since he returned to Brighton's team. One goal, which I guess you can't rely on, although Purvis Estupiñán for a defender takes a wildly high amount of shots compared to others. But Brighton also registered their first clean sheet of the season against West Ham last time out. Their underlying defensive numbers, Andy, have improved quite a bit. I think they rank about eighth in the league for XGC in the last six, which doesn't feel very Brighton-esque, but is definitely a movement in the right direction if you're going to be looking for a defender. But again, similar to Gross, it's those fixtures, that attacking upside and the increased clean sheet likelihood that definitely makes him quite appealing at the minute.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's one of the most high up players in the game for like expected goals, goal involvement amongst defenders when he's on his best. So, you know, that's a huge plus for him. And with his level of goal involvement at his price, I mean, he gets Trippier and Trent numbers of goal involvement when he's at his peak for, at the moment this season, what is three and a half mil less than some of those players. So the upside of his attacking potential can't be understated when you look at that in the context of great fixtures for Brighton and a very, very attacking team under De Zerbi. But yeah, the fact that those underlying defensive numbers have kind of been pretty good recently as well, is a big plus, isn't it? And also that when you've got those good fixtures, not only is that obviously good for him from an attacking point of view, but yeah, that maybe they'll regress to the mean a bit. Of the numbers haven't been horrendous this season, but they've had one clean sheet in the league now, which, you know, they've probably been, their number underlying numbers have been deserving of like at least a handful, right? So maybe him coming back will help with that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I guess he does change the balance perhaps of how they set up defensively, because he is such an attacking player, but yeah, maybe provide some other cover comes from elsewhere. Let's move out, Andy, to the fringe of the radar, and we've got at least one familiar name. Ezri Konsa is going to remain here. I mean, Villa ultimately still have very good underlying defensive numbers and an okay run over the next three game weeks. You know, they've got Everton, Newcastle and Sheffield United. Newcastle obviously are a little bit out of sorts at the minute, so that fixture probably appeals more at the minute than it perhaps would have done earlier in the season. Man United also feature in the next four, who can also be a bit out of sorts in terms of the attack. I guess Konsa feels like the cheapest and perhaps most secure in terms of minutes way into Villa's defence. And I guess, again, if you are looking for alternatives to Trent Alexander-Arnold, because you're going to get rid of him with his injury, or maybe you're just not comfortable with the price any longer, then I guess there are worse places to look than Ezri Konsa. Worth also maybe coupling this with an Arsenal defender, Andy, that you know, again, I think they've been on our radar quite a bit. You are tending to pay, you know, £5 million at least for an Arsenal defender, but they do have the best underlying defensive numbers in the league. I guess it's just pick your poison over which one. You know, Saliba and Ben White, I think, are at 5.6. Gabriel significantly cheaper, but there may also be an under the radar pick who's very, very affordable in Jakub Kivior.
Yeah, I mean, he's only 4.3 million. You've got a bit of a gamble in that obviously Zinchenko can come in that position, but he hasn't been particularly in favour this season. Like we've seen Tomoyasu starting at left back ahead of him. He's made a few mistakes when he has played. You know, that then if you go for Kivior at 4.3, you've got to accept the gamble that comes with it. But in the games that he starts, you're getting a 4.3 million way into the best defensive team in the league. So, yeah, that's the upside.
Absolutely.
Suppose, as well, that fixtures, that's another reason to look at Arsenal defenders. Yes, they're the best, but they've got if they had bad fixtures coming up, we maybe wouldn't be talking about it so much, but they've got reasonable fixtures coming up in the short and medium term. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Crystal Palace, Nottingham Forest being the next two, I think, is definitely the headline. Liverpool in game week 23 is maybe one to avoid. But yeah, I guess if you've gone with Kivior, then very easily benchable. I mean, the additional player, Andy, on the fringe, the new addition is Richarlison. I think this is a player that we mentioned on the Anyone Else last time out, but his numbers are good enough really to make the fringe. Now he's fourth in the game for non-penalty XG. The fixtures are okay for Tottenham. I guess there is still the Timo Werner question mark about whether it affects, you know, Richarlison playing through the middle or whether it affects Tottenham's shape. But yeah, he seems to have kind of finally settled at Spurs. He's a player that I think we definitely thought about, maybe not strongly considered, but definitely thought about for our wild cards. I think in the end, maybe just couldn't quite squeeze him in, or thought that there were maybe some better options to go with. But ultimately, he is a midfielder that's pretty affordable playing out of position for a team that likes to attack and score goals. So there's plenty of upside.
Well, that's it, yeah. And he's not outrageously expensive. Is he, what, 6.8, 6.9 now, something like that? And obviously, yeah, 5 points a goal playing through the middle. It's, yeah, I mean, fourth in the game for non-penalty XG, usually getting 5 points a goal at 6.9 million or whatever, usually someone would be absolutely like jumping on, right? But I suppose it doesn't matter what your non-penalty XG numbers are if we know that you can't meet them, and we know consistently that he kind of hasn't done. So, yeah, and then there are the question marks over the fact that Timo Werner could directly impact his expected minutes. Like, there is a situation where if Werner does all right and plays through the middle, he plays Kulusevski one side, Johnson the other, and Richarlison's the one that gets dropped if his form drops off. We've seen Ange do that earlier in the season, drop Richarlison, that is. So I suppose they're the worrying signs. But look, in the short term, there's no Son. Richarlison's been playing well and scoring goals. So, you know, that's why he's on the fringe of the radar here. His underlying numbers are good. He's probably going to be playing through the middle and he's getting returns. So, yeah, I mean, their fixtures aren't too bad either. A little bit more of a mixed bag. They're away at United this week. But look, I mean, Blinkenek, every strike in the world can score. And every striker that we've talked about coming up, I think we've said it, I don't even know for how many different players recently, oh, Man United, that's not really as much of a difficult fixture anymore, and then they all relentlessly go and score against Man United. So
yeah, it's become FPL large bingo, that, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. But it's true. I mean, it then goes and happens, and then it's Brentford, Everton, Brighton, Wolves, Chelsea, Palace. So it's not an awful run. Yeah, amazing, but not awful.
Yeah, no, it seems decent. And yeah, I think it's especially if you are looking for that Jared Bowen replacement. I mean, obviously we've mentioned Gross on the mid-range of our radar, and I think we prefer Brighton's fixtures in general, but I guess you'd say that Richarlison's got more of an upside than Pascal Gross, and I think that's fair. But yeah, a little bit Darwin Nunez-esque can come with quite a bit of frustration, I think. So yeah, you know what you're getting into if you do bring Richarlison into your team. He can be incredibly frustrating, but there's potential for hauls, which I don't think there quite are in the same way for Pascal Gross. So yeah, plenty to think about, and two good options for those looking for Jared Bowen replacements. Anyone else, Andy, not on the radar, but that you are keeping your BDI on?
Yeah, well, we sort of mentioned Werner earlier. I mean, there's loads of caveats around that, but we're ultimately at 6.5 mil if he comes in and lights it up. We keep an eye on from an interest point of view at this point, aren't we? With more commitment, I suppose, I'm keeping my eye on the return of Kevin De Bruyne. Classy player, has been 12 million plus at points in last season, and the one before is 10.2, I think he's coming back at.
Yeah, it's not his price.
His upside is potentially very appealing. Obviously, he's had lots of injury problems recently. Is he going to return the same player? Is he going to start every game with Foden and Bernardo Silva and Alvarez all playing well in that front line? There's no guarantees. Maybe his minutes will be managed a little bit more. But yeah, it's certainly one for keep an eye on. And of course, you know, to the point I said earlier about cheap starters always making their way into our thinking, Garnacho is, you know, 4.8 mil at the moment. It's only 0.3 more than the minimum price possible for a midfielder. And I think he's nailed down now the right wing starting position for Man United. And getting returns, his underlying numbers are fairly decent. He's in the top 10 or 15, I think, for expected goal involvement in the last six games, albeit a lot of that came in one or two games, but still, nonetheless, it's been relatively spread out at other points. And he contributes to goals and assists when he's on the pitch. He is a productive player. So obviously, don't trust Man United, otherwise he'd probably be closer to being on the radar. But at that price, for someone who's getting involved in goals, you know, I think you're going to be keeping an eye on him.
Yeah, I mean, we toyed with some other cheap midfielders, and I guess we haven't really focused on too many cheap midfielders this season because there seems to be so many midfielders with upside, and that's kind of where you put your money. But yeah, I think Garnacho is a reasonable shout. He seems to be maturing more, at least on the eye. I think he seems to be making better decisions than perhaps he used to. And yeah, I think you're right. It seems like he is increasingly favoured over Antony, which definitely wasn't the case earlier in the season. So if you're getting expected minutes and good underlying numbers, which we have seen from him, then yeah, you know, why not take a flyer on a player that's got that decent upside? And yeah, just on the Kevin De Bruyne point, he hasn't been this cheap for four seasons. I mean, if that's not a good reason to maybe think about going for it, or at least keep an eye on it, and we'll come to him again in a minute, then yeah, I think there's plenty of good reason there. And the other player that I'm just gonna throw out there is keeping an eye on is Ivan Toney. I think you said yesterday, Andy, to me, he's the fourth most expensive forward in the game, despite not having played a single minute this year, which, you know, is obviously a lot to do with his starting price. I think he's 0.1 million cheaper than he was at the start of the season. But yeah, fresh back off his suspension and ready to go. I think he's a player that definitely needs to be approached with caution, and is one that I'm absolutely going to be only keeping my eye on before getting too excited about. In fact, I'm not particularly hot on Brentford generally at the minute, but we know that this guy can do from an FPL point of view. I did see today, Andy, that, and I don't like to pick on anyone, but I saw the official FPL scout on the official website has put him in his scout selection for this game week. That feels a bit too much for me, a little bit too rich, but I think it's well worth keeping an eye on Tony to see if he can recapture that form and quickly that he's shown before.
I mean, yeah, okay, Nottingham Forest at home, but if he's to start, which I don't know if there's any guarantees about, like literally his first competitive game for 8 or 9 months.
I think he starts because they don't have anyone else, right? It's because Visser and Visser's gone to AFCON and Bremo's out. But yeah, point taken.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be using my transfer on him this week, but I'm definitely going to be keeping my eye on him over the coming weeks to see if he can recapture something. A transfer on him this game week seems.
I mean, it's all right being the official FPL scout when you are just picking an 11 every week, regardless of like worrying about transfers. And if he does crap, oh well, I don't have to pick him in my 11 next week. It's not the same consequences for the rest of us, is it? So.
No, sure, but I still think there's like, I mean, I guess we don't want to get into this, but I think there's a level of like irresponsibility for the reasons that we've like picking Ivan Toney for that reason. Like, it feels like a huge gamble when you know that you're going to have so many eyes on your team. There we go. Anyway, I'm going to keep my eye on him, but definitely not. Definitely not using a transfer on him. Let's take a quick break, Andy, and then when we return, we will be swimming against the tide for the first time in a while.
Here at the FPL Lounge, we are keen to hear from you. You can join in the conversation on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_Lounge. We will preview every game week throughout the season, exploring options for your chips and transfers. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods so that you have all the information you need before the game week deadline. Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.
Welcome back then. So, swimming against the tide, Andy, this feels like a long time coming, but let's don our trunks and go diving into the deep blue. We've already mentioned him, so it feels a bit weird, but I guess similar to the argument I just made against Ivan Toney, this player feels like it's too soon to be using a transfer on him. And then when you add in the fact that he is more expensive than Ivan Toney, it feels like too much of a risk, I think, for me. Kevin De Bruyne is the fourth most transferred in player ahead of game week 21. Sometimes the fourth most transfers in isn't a particularly big net number, but this is over 500,000 transfers, Andy, for Kevin De Bruyne so far. He is £10.3 million, and sure, there's going to be a lot of managers that are going to be getting rid of Son because he's gone to the Asian Cup and getting rid of Salah because he's gone to the African Cup of Nations, but this is a player that's been out for a long time. Pep Guardiola has publicly stated he's going to be cautious with, and he's only just started returning off the bench against Huddersfield in the FA Cup. I don't think I'd be using my transfer on him this week. I think I'd definitely be waiting to see, especially given the fact that there's going to be a fortnight until Man City play in their next league game. And if he comes through this one unscathed and gets a few more minutes off the bench before they go on to Abu Dhabi or wherever they're going on warm weather training, it feels like that's maybe when I'd use my transfer on him and not at all this week, even if I am getting rid of an expensive midfield asset.
Well, that's it exactly. Yeah. I mean, and not just because I've got a pizza on the way, but I don't think we need to labour the point too much. Like like you said, okay, if you're moving from Salah or Son, it's an easy move. But like he's still your money, your FPL money invested in him, which you could use elsewhere, right? For a guy that we don't even know is playing this game week, definitely. And if he does, probably would come off after 60, you'd think, even if he starts. So why not? Like, yes, we mentioned him, but I think it's legit to say we're keeping an eye on him, seeing how he does and how long he plays for. And also equal to at the same time say, whoa, 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 we're swimming against the tide of like bringing him in. Like, yes, if he starts, there's a chance he does well and gets some decent returns. City have got a fixture against a team which might have sounded difficult to start the season, Newcastle, but have obviously been defensively a shambles recently. So I think the worst team in the league over the last 6 games for expected goals conceded. So yeah, if KDB starts, he could return and then maybe we look a bit silly. But not only could he have his minutes managed, he might not start at all, and then it's about a large amount of money to to spend this particular game week. So I think we're happy to swim against that.
Yeah, I am. And as you say, yeah, if he does end up returning or, you know, doing something off the bench, then great. But yeah, I don't think I'd be risking my transfer and that level of investment for a player that I'm just not sure what his sort of minutes is going to be like, or maybe even where he's going to end up playing in City's team. I think there is some chat that he might end up a little bit deeper alongside Rodri. So yeah, I definitely want to see it with my eyes before I'm spending 10.3 million, even if he is cheaper than he has been at any point in the last 4 years. So yeah, happy to swim against this one, this game week. Let's move on to captaincy, Andy, which feels significantly less clear-cut than our swimming against the tide. And I think maybe let's start with this kind of conundrum that is because of the elongated game week. How much of a risk do you want to take by putting your armband on someone that plays in sort of game week 21B, i.e. next Saturday and next Saturday, Sunday or Monday? That feels like a risk that I'm not particularly willing to take, but that does ultimately, if you agree with us, narrow your pool of captaincy options quite significantly.
Well, yeah, there's a risk, right? Injuries in training, obviously that's a potentially, you know, obscure one, but all kinds of information in press conferences, you know, rotation, that it just feels a bit dangerous. I mean, I don't think we're probably saying that there's some players who you'd think, particularly when you're talking about captains, because they're often reliable starters, right, that unless something awful happens, they're very likely to be playing for their team. But it just, I suppose it's an extra factor in if you're weighing up, and it seems like this week there's not many obvious standouts, so lots of people are being weighed up that against each other, that's a factor in it, isn't it, that you're able to captain someone with more knowledge and certainty who plays this weekend than next weekend.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I mean, let's maybe go through that the first half of the game week, and obviously, you know, Burnley Luton probably not going to have many captaincy options. But we come to the games on Saturday, let's go through Sunday. I don't think there's maybe going to be loads in Everton Villa. I think there might be some Ollie Watkins captaincy, there might be some appeal for him, but not particularly for me. And then I don't think there's a lot going on in Man United and Spurs either. So yeah, Saturday, Chelsea, Fulham and Newcastle, Man City maybe is the obvious place to start. I mean, Cole Palmer coming off the back of a three attacking return haul in his last game, he's going to be particularly popular, I think, this game week. Chelsea at home, Fulham have played midweek, so might be a little bit less rested than Chelsea. And obviously, we know that this guy's on penalties and has pretty good underlying attacking numbers, irrespective of penalties. He's going to be a pretty popular option, I would assume, this game week. And then if you do go to Man City, and if we do end up hearing from Pep before the deadline, and he says there is no Haaland and there is no KDB maybe, or we're going to be careful with KDB's minutes, then I guess Phil Foden and Julian Alvarez really come into the thinking. Two players that have had decent attacking returns over the last couple of game weeks and good underlying numbers to go with it. And then similarly, if Pep says Erling Haaland is starting for me and you're going to bring him back into your team, then he's going to be a very good captaincy option this game week.
Yeah, I think like I said just then, really, Newcastle not a great defence recently. And yes, if you know someone's likely to be playing, I mean, I think Foden probably plays, even if KDB starts, Foden's been playing so well recently that surely he takes up one of the, maybe like the left wing position, right? So yeah, Foden seems a good shout. I suppose Alvarez depends more on Haaland, does it?
Yeah.
But obviously, if Haaland doesn't play, Alvarez plays through the middle. If Haaland does play, there's possibly still a chance of Alvarez playing at 10 or on the left, I guess. So it's not completely ruled out. But I guess I'm not really basing this on much like factual, just I guess opinion and feeling that Foden feels a little bit more secure in City's team. So if I was going to go one of those between those two, then yeah. But obviously, Haaland trumps them if we know he's starting, for sure.
I mean, and you did highlight it, I think, earlier in the show, but Newcastle's underlying defensive numbers, they've got an XGC in the last six matches of 19.5. I mean, that is outrageous. That's 6.5 worse than the 19th worst team in Luton. I mean, a lot of those do appear to be penalties or set play. Their open play XG is still the worst in the league, but isn't 19.5. I think it's about 14.5, but yeah, that is bad. That is a defence that has been very, very troubled. And even recently, they have had their first choice defence back, albeit maybe not with Nick Pope. So yeah, they're absolutely a team to target. And I think if you hear from Pep or get any indications from him who is going to start or who's going to get a lot of minutes for Man City this weekend, then I think the armband on any of those assets is definitely worthwhile. Anyone else, Andy? I mean, maybe in the second half of the fixtures this game week or any kind of other, you know, maybe slightly left field ideas from you for the armband?
Yeah, well, I mean, you might have mentioned this and I missed it with the internet dropping out slightly when you were talking, but Palmer obviously is playing in this first weekend and he might be a decent shout. You might have said this, he played false nine in the cup, you know, that adds an extra element of maybe, although arguably, you know, players who've played false nine for Chelsea haven't done particularly well, and maybe he'd be better off just playing as a 10 because he's been fairly successful there. Going on to the second half of the weekend, I mean, Arsenal's team is particularly in the forward areas a little bit more trustworthy and reliable to predict, right? So although Saka's not had great form recently, he almost definitely starts that game against Palace, right? Or unless something drastic happens. So his form's not been the best, but ultimately he's still a good player and he's got returns this season, and they're playing at home against a Palace team who, you know, are playing particularly amazingly this season. So that would give you a bit of, like, at least a guaranteed starter in a fairly attacking position as a captain. I don't think it's like, you know, over a long term, Palmer, Saka, at the moment obviously Palmer's popular because of his hauls recently, right? But over a long term, like over the course of a season, would you expect Palmer or Saka to have like more attacking returns? You'd see it as a fairly even thing and probably give the fav towards Saka because of his longevity and what he's shown over a longer period of time, right? So that one's maybe not an awful shout, I don't think, either.
Great stuff then, Andy. Well, let's finish as we always do, or at least haven't done recently, but let's resume the competition that everyone wants to get involved in. It's Who the Heck is Stat each week. Andy and I take it in turns to pick a player from the FPL universe, and the other person has to guess who it is. They must be owned by at least 5% of managers, and they get 5 clues. If they guess it after the first clue, they get 5 points, and after the second clue, they get 4 points, and so on and so forth. Each time we hear a new clue, we get 2 minutes stick or twist on our previous guess, so we don't reveal the answer to the end. So you can play along wherever you are listening to the FPL Lounge podcast. A couple of game weeks since we last did one of these, but last time out, you got the mother loads. You got a 5-pointer off Anthony Gordon, which means you're now in the lead for the first time this season. But yeah, I'm giving you the opportunity to extend that lead because I'm picking for you this game week. Are you ready?
I think I am a little bit nervous about, you know, not in the swing of knowing who's the top 5 scoring defenders and all that jazz that usually comes out. But
I get you. I feel like I'm a bit cold. So in many respects, I'm glad that it isn't me going this week. But yeah, I like this one. So let's see how you get on. Clue number one then. It is this player's first season in FPL and they have started 17 games so far in this campaign. Who the heck is Stat?
That's very difficult to go off. So they've started most, but not all. That's all I've got to go. It's their first season. Okay. Who is new in the league? Was there like a big signing for a team in particular I can think of? So Onana's played every game. Have City bought anyone in? Guardiola, but not as much as 17. I don't think he's had. Liverpool, they've obviously bought a few in. Szoboszlai, but would he be 5% owned? Gravenberch hasn't. Who else have they bought in this year? Is there anyone major there particularly? Spurs, who could it be for them? Udoji? He is new. He missed a game or two with suspensions and things. Did he have a 3-match ban, though? I suppose it's been 20 game weeks. I don't think he probably played from game week one, though. Well, it's an option, and he'd be over 5% owned. Who else? So I did Liverpool, Arsenal. Rice was their big signing, but obviously he's played the Premier League before. Chelsea.
30 seconds.
Obviously bought in 373 different players. But most of them played in the league before. Enzo was in it before this season. Jackson, Nick Jackson, that's an option. He could
be
10
seconds.
He'd be over 5% owned, I imagine. Okay, well, I'll go Udoji just because he was the first one that came to mind, but yeah, might not be him.
Okay, definitely a doggy to begin with. Clue number two then. This player has had four price rises this season, as well as one drop, making them £0.3 million more expensive than their starting price. Who the heck is that?
If I've got them boshed 2 5-pointers in a row, you're going to be a little bit unhappy. I think he is 4.8 million though. So whether that's been four rises and a drop, I don't know about. But I had a feeling he was 4.8 million when I sold him. No. Why do I think he's that? It sounds about right. So that would make Nick Jackson, what was he? He was 7, I think. So that would make him 7.3. Would he have had four price rises? He was very popular at one point, so maybe. It's probably not enough to move off, though, Udoji, because I feel fairly confident would he have had four and then gone down? Maybe went down one when people were transferring him out because he got a ban. Yeah, could see that happening. I think I'm just going to have to stick at this point.
Going early.
Well, yeah, because I can't think anything's going to make me want to move off, so...
All right, no problem. Let's go straight to clue number three then. This player has scored fewer than 50 FPL points this season, yet is in the top three owned at his club and has the lowest points total of the top 15 highest owned players at his position. Who the heck is Stat?
Okay, my brain can't take that much information in at once. He's scored under 50 points.
Correct. Top three owned at his club. And he has the lowest points total of the top 15 highest owned players at his position in the game.
Yeah, well, that one I've got to kind of just put to the side because that's perfectly possible if he's got under 50 points, whatever his position, I guess, other than goalkeeper. Top three owned at his club, that's possible. Porro's the highest, he must be. Richarlison would have gone up recently. Who else would there be? Trying to think. Son, I guess, probably still has a high ownership, or whether he's had enough sells yet, or whether there's been people holding him. So let's say it's Porro, Son, Udoji, probably. I can see it. He was reasonably well owned. He was in both our teams. Under 50 points then. Spurs haven't had loads of clean sheets. He'd have got negative points for the red card. He has had a goal, I think. But I don't think Spurs have had loads of clean sheets, have they? So I'm feeling like this is possible still, which is dangerous. But I need to probably use the time this time, because just because it feels like it's him at the moment doesn't mean it is. It could be other people this applies to.
30 seconds.
Nick Jackson could be under 50 points for sure, and also could still be 7.3 mil. So I think he's still in the running. Third highest owned at his club, possible. I guess wouldn't have the lowest amount of points in the top 15, probably as a forward. But yeah, given the amount of seconds I've got left, just stick with Udoji for now.
10 seconds.
I'll stick.
All right then, clue number four. This player has two defensive teammates, one of whom who has scored more goals than any other defender in the game, and one of whom who has the joint most assists of any defender in the game this season. Who the heck is Stat?
I don't know what defenders have particularly scored like goals. I wouldn't be surprised if Porro has the most assists, because he's had a couple recently and that's what's been getting people buying him in more. So one of his defensive teammates has the most goals and one has the most assists.
Joint most assists, but yeah.
Joint most assists. So who could have the most goals? It would have to be Porro or Romero, would it? Porro's not had a goal, I don't think. So it'd have to be someone like a Romero or someone like that. He's had a goal or two, maybe, I think, from set pieces, I'm feeling like. But the highest goal scoring. So, OK, is it a Liverpool player? Because could it be like a Trent or something? I mean, I suppose you say defensive teammates. Nick Jackson has defensive teammates just because he's
Yes, but no. That is the clue that they are a defender.
Yeah, right. OK. I'm not convinced a Spurs defender is the highest goal scoring defender in the game, but I don't really know how many goals various defenders have scored. And like a lot of the other stuff, like I think the Porro assists thing could fit, the other clues fit. So I've probably got a stick.
Sorry, you've got less than 30 seconds. I missed that. You've got 25 seconds.
Yeah, I've probably got to. I think I'll just stick and get another clue, because if I'm going to move off of Doggy, I'm going to need more evidence, I think.
All right, then. Clue number five, then. Final clue. This player has already served two suspensions this season, one for a red card and one for five yellow cards. Who the heck is Stat?
I mean, This could end in disaster. There could be someone else that this fits for, but I still feel, I know he definitely had the red card. Did he have the five yellows? I think he might have done. So like, I strongly feel like this could be, this is him. Like to get to this point and not have anything steer me off. I mean, back to back five pointers. That is like, if it is him, this is unprecedented and will never be matched again. Like, on either side of the Christmas break as well. Like, I don't really know where to go, because I feel like I've got to. He's definitely had one. There can't be many players who's had two suspensions, right? And I know he's definitely had one, and that was a red card. Like, those who have had suspensions, it will be the five yellows thing. And I know he's had a red. So I guess I'm sticking. And like, I'm on 5 or 0 at this point, which feels scary. I don't feel as confident as you should do that it's a five pointer. But
you're gonna stick. Still got 50 seconds. You want that pizza, don't you? I think that's the
that is also a driver. Yes.
Well, you can have a 5-point topping pizza.
Because
he's done it.
Oh my god.
He pulled it out of the bag. It is Destiny a doggy. Who used to be one of my favourite players in the game and is now absolutely my least favourite player in the game. I mean, there you go.
I've just scored half your current total in 2 weeks.
Yeah, all right. Like, great.
From 2017 to 2027, unbelievable scenes.
Yeah, it's quite upsetting, isn't it? But, well, not for you, obviously. But, yeah, no, well, there we go. Yeah, so let's go through the clues. Yeah, obviously, his first season, he's played 17 games. Yeah, that wasn't the greatest giveaway, but I guess.
I ended up just going through the big teams.
Yeah, I
the,
mean.
The new so signings. Think, and he was the first one I came to, basically. That might
first season narrows it down way more than second or third or fourth season, really. True. Doesn't it? So yeah, I mean, but we went there, we took the, you know, I'm happy to take the risk, because I didn't give you much else in that clue at all. Four price rises. I mean, I think the fact that you knew his price at that point helped, but you'd already gone with him, so you would have had to know someone else's price to move off, I would have thought. So that would have been, you know, tricky. And then it's easy to stay, I guess. But yeah, he hasn't. I mean, I think the way you went through clue three, which was knowing that he hadn't kept many clean sheets and obviously did take a massive -4 at one point, is going to contribute. And yeah, I thought it was interesting that, you know, considering his roughly 10% ownership, you know, there are so many defenders that have scored more points than him this season. I think is just kind of interesting. But yeah, he's still in the top three owned at his club. Romero's got more goals than anyone else. Porro's got the joint amount.
I'm really surprised about that.
Yeah, Porro's got three goals this year. I think he got one on game week one, which probably, and I think at one point he was one of the players, along with Anderson, that we were felt like we could regularly swim against almost week in, week out, because he was being brought in because of his attacking returns, even though Spurs weren't showing much defensively. And then, yeah, two suspensions, as you say. He got one for the red card against Chelsea, which was only a one-match ban because it was two yellows, and one for accumulation of five yellow cards. So there you go.
I would be very happy to sit here and bask in my glory, but I do have some pizza to go eat. So, let's bring this one home, Chris. You've got a flight.
That's quite fine. But yeah, there we go. Let's leave it there, Andy. But obviously, there is plenty to think about for managers this game week. And I guess we did try and go through as much of it as we could in the talking points. But if our listeners do have any questions, how can they get in touch?
They can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at @FPL_lounge. And yeah, let us know what you're doing with Salah, with Haaland, and maybe a pick-me-up for Chris would be helpful too.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, the perfect pick-me-up would be a five-star review or five-star rating and a review. I think that would be perfect. So please do that wherever you get your podcast from. Having just taken a bit of a break, Andy and I are obviously now going to take another break, because there will not be game week 22 until the end of the month, and that game week starts midweek. It starts on Tuesday the 30th of January, so we'll aim to get our game week 22 podcast out probably the weekend before, maybe a little bit earlier, depending on what our fun weekend plans will be. But Andy, until then,
thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.